The Rabbi Yonatan Eibshitz brings down a medrash. He says that in the medrash it says on the pasuk Imri na achesi at Avram says to Sarai as they're approaching Eretz Mitzrayim, Imri na achesi at, please say that you're my sister. So Rabbi Yonatan Eibshitz brings down that it says in the medrash Mikan, from here we learn Sheshechten behema lachayla b'Shabbos. That you're allowed to do a shechita for a chayla sheish b'sakana Shabbos, but he needs meat, so you're allowed to shecht the behema. Now the halacha is pretty straightforward. No raised eyebrows about the halacha itself, right? We all understand that a chayla sheish b'sakana, the doctor says he needs meat, so of course you're allowed, if you don't have meat, so you shecht the behema to give him meat. But the medrash is very puzzling. What's the shaychas to this puzzle? Imrina achesi at. So Yonatan Eibshitz brings down this medrash, and then he explains it as follows. He says that this halacha that we're sheichtin avela sheichtin behema lechayla b'Shabbos is really a big discussion in Rishonim. Even though everyone would agree that if the doctor says he needs meat, he's a chayla sheish b'sakana, and he has no meat, so you take a behema and you shecht it. But there's a big discussion in Rishonim. Let's say there is meat available, just not shechted. You could give him the vela, or you could shecht an animal. And that's already a very hard decision, because on the one hand, you might say that it's better to give them the nevela. Nevela, it's an iser, but it's much smaller iser. It's not a leisas sheish by misas based in. It's not a leisas sheish by kares. It's just a regular leisas. If somebody eats nevela, he's over leisas. He's chayav malchus if he's amazed. But it's just the base level leisasa. Chil Shabbos is much greater than that. Chil Shabbos is one of the most severe averes that we have. That's the leisasa sheish by misas based in. So if you have to choose between one or the other, there's a general rule. Whenever you're being mechal Shabbos for a chayla, there's a rule of hakal hakal tchila. You go with the lightest iser possible. So the Gemara in Yumadav Pei Gimel speaks out that if you're choosing between nevela and tevel, you give them the nevela because tevel is a more chamer iser. So when you're choosing between nevela and chil Shabbos, it would seem that you should go with the nevela, not the chil Shabbos. That would be maybe your first thought. The Ran says that no, it's more kedai to shecht the behema, because you shecht the behema, one ma'aseh shechita, you do a malacha, and you're done. You once it's shechted, it's shechted. If you're going to feed him the nevela, so every bite is another iser. So even though Shabbos is a bigger iser, but it's just one, and nevela is going to be multiple isurim. So the Ran says a chiddush that multiple small isurim outweigh one big iser, and therefore it's better to be sheichet the behemah for Shabbos.
That's a Gemara in Yuma, no?
Yeah. No, the Gemara says akala kal tchila. On that Gemara, the Ran and the Rush bring down this discussion, but this chiddush is the Ran, that multiple small isurim are worse than one big isur, so it's better to do the shechita and the chil Shabbos rather than feed him nevela. That's a chiddush of the Ran.
What about a chil Shabbos? It's not a one shot. Let's say carrying the meat Shazarabim on Shabbos. So every step, right, is another
chol Shabbos. Is it? No. Carrying it many blocks is the same one malacha. So Zuckerman is an apeshitz. He says, now we're getting closer. Avram Avinu was coming to Mitzrayim, and he anticipates that the Mitzrayim are going to be after Sarai. So it says in the pasuk that he was afraid that they were going to kill him. Mm-hmm. Now, why do they have to kill him? Why do they have to be so frum? They wanted Sarai, just take Sarai. The mashmos is that Avram didn't think they would just take Sarai. Sarai is an ishish ish. So the end, that's one of the Shavuos of Bnei Noyach. He was assuming that the Mitzrayim would be frum to a certain degree. So then the kasha is, and the Rishonim asked this kasha, if he thought they were going to be frum, so why would they kill him? Well, Shvichas Damim is also one of the Shavuos of Bnei Noyach. Gili Arayi is one of Shemitz Bnei Noach. He's being down the Kav Sechus that the Mitzrayim wouldn't want to be over on that Isser. Shvichas Damim, killing him, is also one of the Shemitz Bnei Noach. So why would they want to be over on that Isser? Apparently, Avram Avinu thought that they would sooner be over on the Shvichas Damim than on the Gili Arayi. Why? Because if you're going to kill the husband and then take the wife, so it's a one-shot deal. You kill him and he's dead, and then the wife is mutter. But if you take the wife without killing the Isser, so every day there's another Aver. She's constantly going to be an Ishas Ish. So Avram Avinu made a cheshbin bedas the Mitzrayim. He held that the Mitzrayim hold like the Ran, that it's better to do one big aveira rather than multiple small aveiras. So mikan, from that which he said, mina achesiyot mikan she sheichem nevela lachayla b'shabbes.
Wow,
that's what's written. That's what Rabbi Yenisev says.
That they are mitzriim are anoshim mechuarim, that they're disgusting, low life and black. That's what he says there too. But Avram Avinu, that's what he wrote.
He just compares them to
Avimelech. No, it says it in the Rashi. It says in the Rashi that they're black.
Okay.
And he said that they were disgusting people. Mm-hmm. So that's why he was afraid that they would kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not, they're low.
Right, uncivilized, people. Barbaric.
Barbaric right. People.
Exactly.
The
Chiddush is
that
you could bring
the Hayef
from
Avraham Avinu.
You could bring
the Hayef
from Avraham Avinu.
Right. It has the word Shechem in that.
Because he thought he was ready. He was ready that they should be in his mind. Right? It was more important they should be over on Eish Yisish. Because she was his Eshashish. If she would lie, she would see. So he was ready. There should be a Eshashish, not on
the. That's a Geshmakatayna. That he wanted to save them from being over this Eshashish. And better they should be over this Eshashish. That's the Chayra Raya. Not like the Ram, or at least not like this Shtikal Torah. Because if you bring a Raya from this Parsha, better bring a Raya from Avraham Avinu. But, there's a Ran. The Ran, when talking about this parasha, I think he says that he doesn't think that Avraham Avinu ever thought that Sarai was going to be taken for this. Interesting, in the Ran and the Drashais, going a little bit off topic here, but the parsha reading of the Psukim is that Avraham Avinu basically, sacrificed his wife. He allowed her to be taken. He even almost colluded with them to have his wife taken. The Ran says he can't believe that. He thinks that the strategy was that by saying you're my, if he would say she's my wife, so then they'll kill him and take her. If he says she's my sister, so then Avram was thinking that then they'll look to do business with him, like, they'll apply for the shidduch. Give her to me, give her to me. And he'll have some time, and then by then the hunger will be over, and then they'll leave. Mm-hmm. That's what the Ran says. But I guess the truth is, but then that's also not like this for Rabbeinu Sanhedrin. I hear you are. Rabbeinu Sanhedrin is working with the assumption that he was thinking Kilei Rayas versus Shvichas Damim, and so you're saying let's bring a Raya for care from Avraham Avinu. I hear the Ha'ara. Al Kapanim, this is the Vart that I saw brought down b'shem Rabbeinu Sanhedrin. I thought it was very interesting. I wanted to find the Medrash inside. I looked in the Bereishis Rabbah. I didn't see. I saw this quoted B'Shem Rabbeinu Sanhedrin without any Ma'ar Makom on the Medrash. I looked in the Medrash Rabbah. I didn't find it. I looked in the Medrash Nechum. I didn't find it. I looked in the Medrash that I was in, whatever Medrash were on the shelf. I didn't find it. The next day, I was looking, and there is a Machon Yerushalayim Chamisha Chum Sheiter in Pirisha Rabbeinu Yenison. All the Rabbeinu Sanhedrin's, because Rabbeinu Sanhedrin's wrote various svarim, they collect everything. They have this piece. The piece starts off Issa B'Medrash, without a Ma'ar Makom. Turn the pages, every other page, every Gemara that's quoted, there's a Ma'ar Makom. Every Medrash that's quoted, there's a Ma'ar Makom. So that means that the full weight and force of Machon Yerushalayim Institute could not find this Medrash. Okay, so that's suspicious, right? Now I'm going to share something a little bit maybe a little bit provocative, but then we'll come back to the Rabbeinu Sanhedrin. Let's put Rabbeinu Sanhedrin personally and take him out of the picture. There's a phenomenon that some Achronim write about that they don't like. There's an interesting piece about this in the Marsha Madura Basra on Maseches Shabbos. Now, first, the Marsha was Shmuel Edel. He lived in the 1500s until the early 1600s. And on some Masechta, and it's in the back of every Gemara. Every Gemara, every Masechta has in the back the Marsha. In some Masechtas, right after the Marsha, there's something called Madur Basra. Madur Basra means second edition. So this is actually put out by the Marsha's son-in-law. The Marsha had a son-in-law, a Moshe, who was the Rav in Lublin. And he put out some more of his Shver's Torah that the Shver hadn't included. And he also included in that some of his own Torah. Sometimes, depending on which edition you're using, sometimes you could tell, sometimes you can't tell when it's the Marsha, when it's the Marsha's son-in-law. Anyway, in that Sefer, that's also in the back of the Gemara. So if you open the Masechta Shabbos, so after the Marsha, there's a Madur Basra. And if you take a look over there on Daf Peches, there's a piece, the Agadot on Daf Peches, that's the very well-known Gemara about when Moshe Ben was Eilu Lamarim, and the Malachim said, why are you giving the Torah down below? Tanei Ha'itcha Al-Hashamayim, Moshe Ben had to answer them up. And he has a long piece. This piece actually comes from the Marsha's son-in-law, Rav Moshe of Lublin. And he has a whole arichas explaining that Gemara, which is not important for us. In the course of that arichas, he brings in a pasuk in Tehillim, where David HaMelech says, Sheker sanesi va'asa'eva v'teraska ahavti. That I don't like Sheker, I despise Sheker, I love your Torah. At the end of the paragraph, the author, this Rav Moshe of Lublin, writes, once I have this pasuk here, I just can't resist. I have to tell you what I think of every time I read this pasuk. I think of those darshanim, he says, that start their piece with a medrash, and then they write a very, very fancy, elaborate shtickle Torah to explain the medrash. But there's no such medrash. They made up the medrash. Just to write, just to say over there, fancy, elaborate shtickle Torah. And they make a medrash that sounds like a pella, and it's tailor-made, a medrash plia, right? And it's tailor-made for a clever connection that they thought of. And then, instead of just saying the connection, stam, it's coming to be miyashiv a medrash. And he says, the Marsha's son-in-law. And he says, and on this I say, sheker sanesi v'aseiva v'teirascha ahavti. That even though, he says, David HaMelech is saying, even though I love Torah, but I love Torah when it's emes, not when it's sheker. That's a pasuk? What? That's a real pasuk, yeah. So that's one piece. Now, again, who is this? It's the Marsha's son-in-law, but it's, you know, it's not so much his opinion that I'm interested in bringing from there, but the phenomenon, the existence of the phenomenon. He was observing in the early 1600s that, and he calls them darshanim, that some darshanim were doing this. Wow. Now, there's another piece that corroborates this. There's the Chida and the Shema Gedolim. The Chida wrote, we've mentioned him from time to time, the Chida wrote so many Svarim on a lot of different topics. A lot of Svarim in Halacha, he has Svarim in Drush, but he also has Svarim in history. And he has a sefer called Shema Gedolim, which is like little mini biographies of a lot of different Rishonim, Achronim, you know, Gedolei Yisrael. And it also has a section on Svarim, where he has little descriptions of various Chashav Svarim. And in the piece on the Sefer Drushes Haran, it's a very interesting piece. He sort of goes off onto a little bit of a tangent. We have a Sefer from the Ran called the Drushes Haran. And over there, he goes off onto a tangent to talk about Darshanim in general. And he says that, you know, whereas in Halacha, in Sifrei Halacha, even though, of course, you know, you go to the bookcase and there's so many different Sifrei Halacha, and each author has a little bit of his own style and you know, certainly different schools, you know, different countries, the different tekufos, you could recognize certain, you know, different styles. But there's some degree of commonality in all Sifrei Halacha. The basic premises are the same, that Halacha has to come from the Talmud Bavli, it has to come from the way the Gedolei Yisrael of earlier days interpreted the Talmud Bavli. And so you try to bring rayas from Gemaras, from Rishonim, to what the halacha is going to be. Now, there's lots of different styles about what kind of rayas people bring, and what kind of, you know, how they go about it. But there's a certain degree, you know, there are certain ground rules. And the Chida says, Masha'in kein in Drush. In Drush, it's really the wild, wild west. Anybody can do whatever he wants, and there's no rules about what's the proper way and the wrong way to do Drush. And I'm gonna tell you a little bit about the different styles that I've seen and some things that I think should be eliminated. And he says, the Drasha Saran is a great sefer. That's why he's writing this in the Drasha Saran. He says, that is my, the gold standard. He explains psukim using Mamari Chazal and Svari Yashara. That's a perfect, you know, that's a perfect trifecta. Mm-hmm. Psukim, Mamari Chazal, Svari Yashara, you can't go wrong. He mentions another sefer, the Akedas Yitzchak, also from Spain in the 1400s, 100 years after the Ran, but the same, right? He's also in Spain. He says these two Svarim are great examples of Drush the way it's supposed to be done. And he says there are some that, building on this foundation, added some nice, you know, there's a style, he said, that's associated with the Alshach. The Alshach is like the master of this style, which is along the same lines as the Ran, but adding Divrei Musar. Like every, right, all of these drushes bring towards Divrei Musar. Very nice. And he mentions some other authors that go along those lines. And then he says the Maharit, and I'm not familiar altogether with where we find the drush of the Maharit. I know this Jew is from the Maharit, but he says that the Maharit, he has a style of drush that incorporates halacha also. It's explaining psukim in the parasha with Mamari Chazal, with Svara, but it also ties it together with halacha. Okay, that's a shtick that the Maharit invented, and then he says, and some other authors go along those lines. Those are all fine. Then he says there's a style that came about in Spain in the 1400s, which started with psukim and trying to explain psukim using philosophy. And it's all philosophical thinking. And he says, I don't like those at all, and I'm happy that that's gone out of style. But he writes, interestingly, gives you a little insight to, you know, the Chidah. He says, when I was in Paris, I was exploring in the manuscripts they have in their archives, and I see there were lots and lots of darshanim in Spain in the 1400s. They went with this style, but they're all down there in the basement in Paris. They the style went out of style, so we don't find those anymore in print. Then he writes, there are some things that are no good. And he quotes that the Shla called out, I didn't see this inside on the Shla, I just saw the Chidah quote the Shla, that sometimes Darshanim will have a drush, will ask a big kasha, and they'll answer it by bringing in a chazal that you never heard of, and with that they'll answer their kasha. And the chazal is just not true. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And he says that, you know, that the Shlo already wrote that he's very upset that people do that. And then the Chidah says, and I've seen even worse. And he says, nowadays I see Darshanim, they'll start their drasha with a Medrash Pliya. And the Medrash says this, and then it says that, and they'll say, could anybody figure out how to connect two such things? What did Chazal mean by that? And then they'll be Oilim V'yardim V'y, you know, he said they'll go, well, weaving in and out to make a complicated Shigul Torah that connect the two things, and then everybody gives them a big round of applause. Wow, they figured out how to connect these two things, but really, they just made the whole thing up. There was no such Medrash. There was nothing to connect. This one is the same thing that the Madhur Abbas and the Marsha was describing. And he says this is very bad, and he even tells a cute story. He says he has, there's a Rav at that time, I don't know who he's referring to, but it's a Rav, somebody, Aleph Yitzchaki, that I guess was a friend of his. And he says one time, somebody came over to him with one of these Midrashim, he said, I'll bet you can't figure out Pshat in such a Midrash. And he told him over one of these Midrash Pliyas. And he says, this Rav Yitzchaki, he saw right through him. He knew that there was no such Midrash. So he says, he said back to the Darshan, he said, what do you mean, you don't know Pshat in that Medrash? You probably didn't read till the end. If you would have read onto the next page, you'll see the answer is right there. And the guy walked away like scratching his head, didn't know what hit him. Anyway, so we have the Chidah. We have, and the Chidah is in the late 1700s. We have the Shla is in the same time, really, as the Marsha's son-in-law. 1600s, 1700s, we have this description of a phenomenon of Darshanim making up a medrash and then, you know, saying a drasha to explain it. Okay, so now we come back to this Rabbi Edison Abschitz. Again, he says this fancy pshat to explain the medrash, and the Mechon Yerushalayim, that, you know, the staff that put it out, couldn't find any such medrash. And it it seems like the kind of medrash that would be tailor-made for just such a pshat. So what are we to think? Now, on the other hand, you know, they were saying it sort of anonymously about darshanim, you know, re'isi eza darshanim. If it is an Eivshitz, then we're going to work with the assumption it's a tzaddik yisoid olam, right? One of the amudim that the Messiah of Torah rests upon. So it's not, you know, not acceptable to suggest this kind of a sheker on the part of Ibanez and Eibshitz.
He was fighting on with Yaakov Emden, right?
True, he was. I think if we invited Yaakov Emden into the shir, he might disagree with this. But I think it's accepted in Klai Yisrael that Ibanez and Eibshitz was a big tzaddik.
When you have a Gezeira Shabbat, that's considered a Jewish? I forget the
problem. No, Gezeira Shabbat only Chazal, you'll only find in Chazal, and even Chazal will only make it with a Maser going back to Har Sinai. That's not something that a shul rabbi can make Gezeira Shabbat, right? We're talking now like a shul rabbi kind of a Joshua.
And what was David referring to when he said that pasuk of
Shekers and
AC?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we have this piece from the Marsha saying he was referring to this kind of drasha. What's the Pshut Shel Mikra?
They were doing it in his time.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. The Pshut Shel Mikra? I don't know. So now, the truth is, I would say, you know, even I wasn't going to mention Rabbi Yaakov Emden, but once you're mentioning Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and you know, we said that, okay, he might take exception to what I just said, that, you know, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden was a tzaddik. But the truth is, even if you put aside the fact that he was a tzaddik, I think that even if you weren't going to accept that as a premise, it's still not plausible to say that that's what's going on over here. You know why? Because who would do this? Somebody that, you know, my job is I'm a darshan, right? I have a deadline. Tomorrow morning I have to give a drasha in shul. And Chav Nishvas Zuzogin. So, you know, you might use this trick to, you know, to make up something. Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz is one of the most prolific darshanim in history. There are svarim that are chock full of the beautiful drushas that he gave. I mean, he was a drush, he was officially the darshan in Prague for many years, then later he was the darshan in Metz. If I'm not mistaken, the Sefer Yari's Dvash, which is the classic sefer of his drushas, is just what he gave in a couple of years in Metz. And, you know, there are many, many more drushas that he gave in Prague. He was a darshan par excellence. He did not need to use dirty tricks to make his drushes. It's just not plausible, really. So it's a real mystery. What is with this piece? So looking back into the Mechon Yushalayim Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz, the Mechon Yushalayim Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz, where it has this piece, at the end of the piece, you know, each paragraph, it says where it comes from. At the end of this piece, it says Memchaf Sof Yud, Miksav Yad. This piece is taken Miksav Yad. This paragraph, it says Miksav Yad. It's from manuscript. I looked in the Hakdama, in the Pesach Davar, is what they call it, in the front, where they describe how Rabbi Anderson was very prolific. He wrote a lot of Svarim, like he has a Sefer of Drushas, he has a Sefer Ala Torah, and he has a sefer on the Haftarah, he's also of Jerush. And in addition to that, there's many, I think they say over there, that they have in their possession, the staff of the Mechon Yushalayim, the researchers, they had in their possession hundreds of manuscripts with the Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz's Torah. And of those manuscripts, there are some that were his own writing, some that were copies, that were supposed to be copies of his own writing, some that were writings of the Talmidim, what they heard from him. In that third category of the writings of the Talmidim, of what they heard from him, some are from the famous Talmidim that everybody knows of, some are from less famous Talmidim or even unknown Talmidim. Some of these manuscripts are very long and extensive, and some are very fragmented. And they write that in the work would be too extensive now. In a later volume, we're going to try to write a mavoi where we clarify what were the different kisvei yad and how we figured out how much weight to put on to which, what kind of ksav yad. Okay, now we're in Parshas Vayera here, so I was looking in Bereishis. So I thought, okay, maybe that mavoi appeared in Shema Yisrael Vayikra B'Midbar Devarim. I checked. It doesn't. They never wrote that Mavai. So they wrote this disclaimer that there are hundreds of manuscripts with a variety of levels of reliability, and they never gave us any tools to figure out, you know, which ones are more reliable, which ones are less reliable, and all we know about this piece is that it's Miksav Yad. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is a fake Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz. The piece that quotes the fake Medrash, the piece that has Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz quoting the fake Medrash, is a fake Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz. That I don't think he really said this drasha. Maybe somebody said this drasha, and someone thought, oh, that sounds very Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz, Dick, and wrote it over B'Shem Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz, and then that was found in a Geniza somewhere, and it says that it's from Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz. I don't know. Obviously, this is guesswork, but I think that it's mistaber. Again, considering that there's really no samchos, there's no reliable mesorah tracing it back to Beis Hanefshit, so I think it's not so schwer if it seems that not to be such an authentic piece. Now, I would also point out, though, sort of in defense, you know, I mentioned that the Chidah and others, they were very upset at this phenomenon. That's what some darshanim do. I think that maybe those darshanim might have said that it's not such a terrible thing. You're right. I lied a little bit. Okay, that's not nice. I should really defend that. But they might say, you know, it's true that the medrash that I said is a fake medrash. But you know what? Consider that just the packaging. I said over a drasha, I asked a kasha on the parsha about Avram Avinu. Got you to think about that kasha. I gave it teretz. I thought it was a nice teretz. God, the Dani shlugged it up. Okay, but we thought it was a nice teretz. More importantly, I got you thinking about the halacha shayla. I taught you the Ran, and that's real. And so, you know, this darshan might say that if everybody knows that when they come to shul on Shabbos, they're going to learn a Ran and Yuma, they're not going to come. But if they expect to hear a dazzling shtickle that, you know, answers a really mysterious medrash, and in the process they're going to walk away knowing the Ran and Yuma, so maybe it's kedai. I think that maybe that's debatable. Just like darshanim do all sorts of packaging, you know, darshanim will use stories and jokes, and most people think that's acceptable. If there'll be some people that would object to that also. Hey, it's a drasha. We're supposed to be learning Torah now. You know, that's bittul Torah. But others say, you know, that's packaging and it makes it more appealing.
It's also
right, right, right. True. It helps people remember it. Sort of as a little bit of a comparable mashal. You know, there's a famous story of Shlomo Shadron.
Fake one everyone remembers.
What?
Fake one everybody remembers.
Right. Of Shlomo Shadron used to say over that. He said, I once went over to the Chazon Ish, and I asked him that, is it okay for me to tell over a Maisa from Gedali Yisrael if the Maisa will really convey, you know, a worthwhile point, and the Olam is gonna gain something from the story, but it's not true. Can I use the name of Gedali Yisrael to say, you know, to be my people? And the Chazon Ish told me that it's fine. And Rabbi Say, that's the first Maisa. So it could be that right, it's not true. So, you know, maybe some people felt that this was also okay. I don't think so. Again, I'm not condoning it, but I think that, you know, maybe it wasn't the worst thing in the world. But be that as it may, I don't think we're forced to say that Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz held that it's not the worst thing in the world. Besides the fact that, of course, it is still possible that maybe there was such a medrash, even though, you know, let me just clarify a little bit about medrashim. Rishonim quote medrashim all the time that we don't have. And we don't think twice about that. We don't think fraud. We don't think corruption. Rishonim quote medrashim that we don't have because medrashim got lost. The Rishonim were living in the manuscript age. Everything was in writing. You know, it was only handwritten. And then in the 1500s, things started to get printed. Some things got printed. Not everything got printed. And the things that didn't get printed got lost. So you'll have, certainly, Rashi, Balei HaTosfos, quoting Midrashim. I think that you have sometimes the Rambam, not on the Mishnah Torah, but elsewhere, the Rambam quotes Midrashim that we don't have. even later with Shana Moshe, if I'm not mistaken, the Ran quotes Midrashim that we don't have. It's not unusual.
Where do they come from?
It's probably in the Vatican, in the library.
What's the origin of Midrashim?
Midrashim were collections of things that Amirayim, mainly Tanoim and Amirayim, said about, let's say, about, you know, about the Torah Shebichtav.
It's Amirayim and Tanoim.
Right. I think it's always attributed to, at least, Tanoim and Amirayim. And these were, you know, things that were written down and passed down through the generations. But some of the major, you know, the major collections, like the Medrash Rabbah, are in print. Some of the others are not. And, you know, you'll still, you know, in let's say in the 20th century, sometimes researchers would find some of these Midrashim that had been lost, but they'll find a manuscript in, you know, in a library in Europe. But there are some that were never found. But Rashi, Tosfos, quote Midrashim, they, you know, so there were such Midrashim, and they were lost. It's just, it seems, so I think some people will be okay with saying that about this. Rabbi Edison Eibshitz quotes a Medrash. We don't have that Medrash, so okay, it got lost. I think some people would solve the mystery just like that. To me, that seems a little bit unlikely, because Rabbi Edison Eibshitz is not from the manuscript age. He was living in the 1700s. Mm. Where did he see Midrashim that we can't see? He didn't. I would assume that he was finding Midrashim on the bookshelf. So he didn't have more books on the bookshelf than we have. So it seems unlikely that somebody from that Tekufa would have a Midrashim that we don't have. I can't say it's impossible, but it seems unlikely. So again, so then you have this Chidah that talks about people, you know, that were making things up, which maybe is defensible, maybe it's not defensible. And then what I think is the most likely explanation of this mystery is that this is somebody else said this. It's not Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz. Because after all, there isn't really any good evidence that Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz said it. It's just in some Ksav Yad, some anonymous Ksav Yad, in which but that somebody connected to Rabbi Anderson Eibshitz. So all it is a good Shikol Torah. So what do we have? We learned Aran, which is a worthwhile thing, right? We learned Aran, a Lomdish piece about Chodesh Yesh B'Sakano. Let's put aside whether or not it is connected to the parasha or it's not, because that, let's say, that shtickle was maybe dubious, but the Inyan itself, let's learn a little bit more about that Inyan, because what we said over is the Ran. It starts with a Ravid. All the Rishonim trace this Shiloh back to the Ravid. He seems to be the first one that discussed this Shiloh, and it was in response to it. To a shayla that he got, people asked him. Apparently, this was a real life situation. You had a chodesh yesh b'sakana. The doctor said that he needs meat, and there was meat available. But that meat was nevela. Is it better to feed him the nevela? Is it better to give him shchuta? So, we at the beginning of this year we learned the Ran's response to that, but the Ravid is the one that came first. The Ravid. His response, the way that it's brought down on the Ran, is that the Ravid said it's better to shecht the behema because the Chilul Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh is doicha the Isser. How do you decide which is the Pikuach Nefesh is doicha? So the Ravid says, the Isser that's oimid lefanecha, the Isser that's standing in front of you, it sounds like he means the one that's blocking you from doing what you would naturally do, that's the Isser that the Pikuach Nefesh is doicha. And the Ravid, imagine this was a Yom Chol, if this was Monday, you'd have a Shaila, you'd think twice, you have a package of Nevela, and you have an animal standing here, and the doctor says the Chol needs meat. Of course, you would check the animal. If it was Tuta, you would check the animal. So the only reason why you're even asking the Shaila is because it's Shabbos. So that means that Shabbos is the issue that's Oymin Lefanecha, so that's what Pikuach Nefesh is Doicha. So therefore, Machal Shabbos, we don't do the Nevela because Pikuach Nefesh, that's not the issue that's Oymin Befnei the Pikuach Nefesh, so Pikuach Nefesh is not Doicha the Nevela, it's Doicha the Chilul Shabbos. That's what the Ran quotes from the Ravid. And the Ran says he doesn't understand, it doesn't make any sense to him. Why are you saying that Shabbos is the one that's Oymin Lefanecha because you're giving an imaginary situation that leads to this was Tuesday, you wouldn't have a Shaila. Okay, I could give you a different imaginary scenario. Imagine that it was Shabbos and the packaged meat had a hechsher. The packaged meat was kosher. Then also you wouldn't have a shayla unless it was Shabbos. The chayla needs meat. You have kosher meat and you have a behema. You'd ask a shayla? Avad not. You would feed him the kosher meat. So why are you asking a shayla? Because that meat is nevela. So can we, you know, turn this around the other way? So the Ran says, I don't understand what the Raven means, that this is the Issa's Emil Lefanacha any more than that's the Issa's Emil Lefanacha. They're both Emil Lefanacha. So the Ran says, so now we come back to what we started with. The Ran says, I agree with his Psak Halacha, better to shech the animal, but I have a whole different reason. The reason why I say it's better to shech the animal is because that way it's just one Isser. Mashiachin, if you give him the veil, it's going to be multiple Isurim. What did the Ravid mean? So it's interesting. This Ravid is quoted different ways in different places. The Ran, I said over the way that the Ran quotes him. He's quoted in the Rush also. The Rush brings down, the Ravid was asked the Shaila, and the Ravid gave a tshuva. And the way the Rush quotes it, it sounds like a whole different svara. Is it really two different versions of what he said, or is it maybe just two different ways of expressing it? And we could look to one to shed light on the other. So I want to tell you over the way the Rush says, but first, there's an interesting thing about this Ravid. You see that it's quoted differently in the Ran and the Rush. There's a third presentation of the Ravid, which is fascinating. The Ramban wrote a sefer called Teres HaAdam, which is a sefer mostly about Hilchas Avelos. It's the halachas of, it's really end of life and after death. So most of it is Hilchas Kriya, Hilchas Avel, Hilchas Kvura. But the first chapter is Hilchas Chol Sheish Meisakana. That's, I guess, you know, the chapter before death and Avelis, etc. First person is sick. So he has a chapter on Hilchas Chol Sheish Meisakana. In that chapter, this is a sefer by the Ramban. Just agav, it's a very unusual thing for the times of the Rishonim to, you know, write a sefer on a topic. Nowadays, that's very much in style. Somebody chooses a topic, he masters that topic, and he'll give you everything there is to know about that topic. In the times of the Rishonim, generally, they wrote on a text. Either they wrote on Shas, or they wrote on Chumash, they wrote on the mitzvahs. But this is like an Achreinisha kind of a style sefer, but from a Rishon. That's the Ramban Sefer Teres HaAdam. In this sefer, in the chapter on Chol Sheish Meisakana, he has a paragraph where he brings down this halacha of machilin ha'akala kal tchila. He brings the Gemara in Yuma that you always try to give the chayla the lighter iser. If you choose between nevela and tevel, you give him nevela. The Gemara over there goes through some other choices. He brings down that whole Gemara, and then he writes v'nishal haray v'zal nevela u'maisa Shabbos. And it's like the beginning, it's like the middle of a sentence, and it stops there. And then he goes on to the next inyan. If you're reading it, it's just, you know, it just looks like a fragmented sentence, and he goes on to the next inyan. In the Tashbetz, that's the tshuvas of the Rashbats, Rav Shimshon ben Tzemach, it's called the Tashbetz. And he was from the later people that were what we call Mibes Midrashi Shal HaRamban, meaning he was 150 years, maybe 200 years after the Ramban, 150 years after the Ramban, but Mitalmidi Talmidav. He was a Talmud, if I'm not mistaken, of the Ran. The Ran was a Talmud of Talmidei HaRashba. The Rashba was a Talmud of the Ramban. So everybody, these people trace back to the Ramban. He says, in the Tashbetz, Chelek Gimel, Siman Lamed Zayin, he's talking about this Inyan. And he had access to the original manuscript of the Ramban's Teres HaAdam. Again, this is in the times of the Rishonim. So everything was manuscript. It was before the printing press, before Gutenberg. The Tashbetz is writing in the early 1400s. And he says that in the manuscript, in the Ramban's own manuscript of the Teres HaAdam, what did I call it before? Did I say Teres HaAdam?
Yeah.
Okay. In the Ramban's own manuscript of the Teres HaAdam, he says that the Ravid was asked the Shaila, and then there's like a couple of inches of blank paper. He left a blank space, and then he went on to the next inyan. Now, when it was printed, that got lost, right? We don't see that. But he says in the original, there was blank space left. The Ramban referred to this Shuvas HaRavid, and he obviously meant to come back to it later after giving it more thought. But apparently he never came back to it, either because he thought more and he couldn't figure it out, or he never got around to it. But the Ramban left space to devote to this Ravid, and that's why when we read it, it looks like a sentence fragment. So the Ravid apparently was a hard inyan. It was always a hard inyan. But the Ran quotes it one way, but like I said, the Rush quotes it a different way. And the way the Rush quotes it is like this, that the Ravid said that you should be doyich. It's better to be to shech the behema and not feed the guy nevela, because you're going to have to cook it anyway, he says. Meaning, let's say you say, I'm just going to go with the nevela. I don't, Ach Shabbos is a big avera, so I don't want to do the Chol Shabbos. I'll just feed him nevela. But you can't give him raw meat, so you're going to have to cook it anyway. Once you have to be Mechal Shabbos anyway, like a Hoyo of Ishtari, so better concentrate all of these surim into one avera rather than do be over various different averas. If you could get away with just being over nevela, that would be better. But if you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos anyway, so just do all the Chol Shabbos and don't do any avera of nevela. And you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos because you're going to have to cook it. What if you have meat that was already, what if the nevela meat is already cooked? Okay, but this chayla means you're going to need hot water also. You have a chayla sheish mitzakana here. You're going to have to heat up water for him. So I think he mentions a third example also. I'm not sure why. That maybe you're going to have to wash him. That if you have a chayla sheish mitzakana in the house, chances are you're being mechal Shabbos. So if you're going to be mechal Shabbos anyway, so better shech the animal, which is an additional chol Shabbos. You didn't really need that chol Shabbos, but better do more chol Shabbos than also be over the isser of nevela if you could avoid touching that isser.
Why?
So I guess like a hoil of ishtri, the isser that's already being nitche, it's better to be deicha that isser.
Each one is a separate aveir.
Right. That's true. That's why it's a mechudish to kesvara. Definitely. But I guess he feels that it's better to be over an aveira that you're already being over. True, each, right, it's a separate ma'is aveira, it needs a heter. But it's better to be over the iser, the same shame iser that you're already being over. The way he says it first is because you need to cook the meat, you need to heat up water for him. And then he says, he takes it to a much greater extreme. Inami, he says, there's surely a katan somewhere. And this line is very unclear. Well, what does he mean by that? Again, this is in the Rush, quoting the Ravid. There's surely a katan somewhere. So what is a katan somewhere? What does that do for us? He's trying to explain that you have to mechal Shabbos ready anyway. I'm not mechal Shabbos my ketanim. I mean, unless there are chol sheish per sekana. What's he talking about? In the shuvah, what? Another in the shuvah, yeah. So in the shuvah Chassam Sefer, he doesn't really say it. I made it up. In the shuvah Chassam Sefer, in the shuvah Chassam Sefer, he explains this line that what he means is a katan who was born 8 days ago, a katan whose mila falls out that day, and mila is doicha Shabbos. So he means to say that every Shabbos, it's easier to be Mechal Shabbos than to be over a different Isser. Again, we're talking about when there's a heter. Not if there's no Chol Sheish B'Sakana, then of course you're not touching anything. But if there's a Chol Sheish B'Sakana, so that's matter for you to do an Isser. So Shabbos, we're already being Deicha anyway. Somebody somewhere is being Deicha Shabbos. I mean, nowadays we might have put it differently. He says, E-F Shur Lai Yekotin B'Seifa Olam. I would say, E-F Shur that there isn't a Hatzalah call every Shabbos. Somewhere, if not Hatzalah of Queens and Hatzalah of the Five Towns, Hatzalah of Borough Park, Hatzalah of Muncie, somewhere they're driving a Hatzalah ambulance on Shabbos. So the Ravid says that makes it easier for us to be Mechal Shabbos. Again, now if there's no Chol Sheish B'Sakana, you're not allowed. You'd be Chayav Misa for doing it. It's a real malacha. But if you do have a Chol Sheish B'Sakana, but you're choosing between Shabbos and a different Isser, better be Mechal Shabbos because we're doing that already anyway. But Nevela Lav Dafka, we're being Deicha, the Isser Nevela anywhere today. So that the Ravid says that's a svara to prefer the Chol Shabbos rather than a different Isser.
Why isn't the first answer good enough? By nevela, you have multiple
Isser. Multiple Isser, that's a very fine answer. That's a very fine answer. The Ravid didn't say it. The Ravid came before the Ran.
I'm saying they're looking for more.
No. The Ravid came before the Ran. No, he said this 200 years earlier. So the Ravid says this is the way that it's brought down in the Rush. The Ran, the way he brought it down was that Shabbos is the Isser that's Oymil Lefanecha. Zakta Tashbetz, I think that Lashon, it's just not a clear way of saying it, but he means the same, he means this other Svara, that's the Isser that you're being Deicha already anyway. When he says that's the Isser that's Oymil Lefanecha, what he means is you're anyway dealing with that Isser. Because you're going to be Deicha that to cook the meat, you're going to be Deicha that to heat up water for him, to wash him. Or, again, in the most extreme version, you're going to be deicha that Isser elsewhere, That's what he means when he says that's Oymi Lefanecha.
I don't understand what that also really means. I'm sorry.
You mean, why should that make it easier for us to be
more? There's Atzala Kol and Manzi.
Right.
What's got to do with
that? So that makes a whole history that meaning the Nevela could still be completed, could still be fulfilled perfectly. But the Shabbos, we're not fulfilling perfectly.
Excuse me, but it's like saying that it's Yisrael now, it's not Shabbos yet, or it's after Shabbos.
That's not an history. That's not a Hetta to be Mechal Shabbos. But he's saying that there is already a Hetta that was Chal on this Shabbos.
And nobody's shechting on that Shabbos. People are running out solar call, but nobody's shechting on the Shabbos.
Right, so but the rabbi is saying that allows us to shech, again, right. If we're doing it for a Chalish Yesh B'Takarna, and we're just choosing which Isser, so this Hoyo of Ishtari Svara, since it's already being Hutar somewhere else, is allowing us to do this. But it is a very surprising Svara, it's a Mechudish Tikka Svara. Like it's pointed out, you know, why don't you just say the other one? So that's the Ran. The Ran says, I don't like this Svara. And he gave the Svara that Nevela is many bites, so it's going to be many Surim. Shabbos is only one. Now, the Rush also talks about it. The Rush doesn't say the Svara of the Ran, but he brings two other Svaras, again, all on the same side as the Ravid. I mean, the question was an open question. There's no Gemara that tells us which way to go. If you're choosing between the Shechita or feeding the Chayla Nevela, there's no Gemara that tells us which way to go. The Ravid was asked the Shaila. He said, Bimachal Shabbos, but he gave a Svara that's a little bit hard to pin down, and even after we hear the Rush's version, which we can at least articulate, we can say it over, but it's a very debatable Svara. We have the Ran, he said a different Svara. The Rush brings two other Svaras. One, I would say, a Lamdish Svara, and one is a Balabatish Svara. Pardon the expression. That's what they call it in Yeshivas. The Balabatish Svara that the Rush says, but it's the Rush saying it, so it's Nishka Farala, right? The Svara that the Rush says is that it's better to shech the behema because if you feed him nevela, the chayla might not want to eat it. The chayla is nafshe kotzboi. If you say, oh, you're sick, come, you know, I see you're going to die, you could eat this. And he'll say, is it kosher? You'll say, no, but it's good enough for you. So he might try to abstain. But he's going to ask, it's kosher. If you shechted the behemoth, and then he'll say, yeah, it's kosher meat. It is the same meat that you eat all the time. So then he'll take it more.
If it's a
Right. He's not going
to
ask that kind of question.
He's not in any position to ask those kind of questions.
Right. Lots of times he is. This question is for eating meat, right? So he's not on IV exactly.
That's true. That's true.
He's eating a piece of meat.
It's also
with Tom Tom Samuel.
Okay. Yeah, it does. Okay, maybe. Although I don't think.
When you say you could shach it on Shabbos, is that a duchya or a hutra?
So Yis is bringing us right into what we were calling the Lamdish, the last answer, and then the Lamdish one. Okay, no, Yis is a Lamdin. No, the rest of you are about Batim, Yis is a Lamdin. Because the Rush then brings down.
It's recorded.
The Rush then brings down from the Meramei Rutenberg, that was the Rush's Rebbe, that he says that you should shech the Behema, and he says really what I mean. Oh, for those of you that didn't hear, Yis was saying that we should have to consider Hutra versus Dechuya. So the way the Rami Rutenberg says it is with a mashal. He says, imagine it's Yontif. On Yontif, not with a chayla, right? On Yontif, you're allowed to shech the behema, right? I mean, nowadays, we don't know this from our experience because we always buy, you know, we don't shech meat ourselves. But, you know, once upon a time, that people were more self-sufficient, they shechted animals on Yontif. So certainly birds, chickens, they shechted on Yontif. The Rambam Rutenberg said, I don't understand. To do malach on Yom Tif is a loisaseh aseh. To eat nevela is only a loisaseh. So I understand you're allowed to shecht, you know, if you need meat, if you, you know, oichal nefesh, you're allowed. But why do we allow you to be over the loisaseh aseh, malach on Yom Tif? Why don't we say it's better to just eat the nevela, which is only a loisaseh, it's a smaller eser? But of course, we don't do that, and everybody knows why. Because when we're shechting on Yom Tif, we're not thinking about how many serum it is because there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it. So he says, shechting for a chayla on Shabbos is just like shechting for a regular person on Yom Tif. There's nothing wrong with it at all. So he didn't use the terminology, but what he means is that it's hutra, it's not dechuya. And since it's hutra, we don't have to look for alternatives. If it was dechuya, meaning that really we're contending with the Yisr, but we're pushing it off because of there's a stronger force, so then we would look for alternatives, look for a better way out. But since Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, is Hutshra, so we don't ask any questions. So we just shechta. We don't care how big an Aveira it is. That's what the Rush brings down between the Rami Rutenberg.
What?
Oh, but the Kash on the Rami Rutenberg is that the same way that Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is Hutshra, so just shech, don't ask any questions. Pikuach Nefesh vis-a-vis the Isser Nevela should also be Hutshra, so just eat it, don't ask any questions. And then if they both have it, just do it, don't ask any questions, so then we have to decide which one should we do. So what did we gain? So the Chacham Sofer says that to understand this Rami Rutenberg, you have to add a knetch, you have to add a step. That the Gemara in Yuma, when it's learning out that Isurim, all the Isurim, Pikuach Nefesh is Deich, all the Isurim, there's the pasuk of Vachai Bahem, which is that's accepted as the best makar that Pikuach Nefesh is Deich, all the Isurim. I mean, all, you know, except for Avodah Zarah, Shechita V'Gilui Reis, all the other Isurim, Pikuach Nefesh is Deich from Vachai Bahem V'Lei Sheyamos Bahem. But in the Gemara, we've mentioned this Gemara before, the Gemara has many drushes over there, and the Gemara ends up saying that the best one is V'chai Behem V'lei Shiyam Asbehem. But one of the drushes that's quoted over there is, V'sham Ruben Yisrael HaShabbos, Mutav Sheikhal Shabbos Achas Kedei Sheyishmer Shabbos Es Harbei. So Chassam Sofer says that drusha only goes on Shabbos. The drusha of V'chai Behem goes on all these Yisrael, including Shabbos. But the drusha of V'chai Behem, that makes Tuchuya. The drush of a shamru, and the Chassam Sofer explains a little bit why he thinks that you should make this chiluk, but the drush of a shamru, that goes only on Shabbos. And that drush is hutra. So this must be what the Rami Rutenberg was thinking. That there is a nevela vis-a-vis Pikuach Nefesh, against Pikuach Nefesh, that's duchuya, because that's just learned from V'chai Bahem. But the Isser Shabbos, since it also has the drush of Vashem B'nei Yisrael Shabbos, that's Hutra. So if this one is Hutra and that one's Tuchuya, that's why we should do the Isser Shabbos rather than the Isser Nevela. That's what, that's the missing words in the Rami Rutenberg, that's what he really meant. Chassam Sofer and Siman Ayin Tess and the Shuvas adds this clarification to explain the Rami Rutenberg. Now, there's one more Rishon that talks about it that I want to bring into the discussion is the Rashba. The Rashba in a tshuva, in Tchelek Alfsim, Tuf Resh Peites, the Rashba, he brings down, it's interesting, he brings down, the Ravid was asked the Shaila, then he says, V'haramban nestapik boy, the Ramban was nestapik about this Shaila. Over there, this is where I got that story before about the blank space. And it's a footnote in the Tshuvas HaRashba, in the Machon Yushalayim Tshuvas HaRashba, there's a footnote over there where the Magia refers us to this Tashbates that I quoted that talked about the blank space in the Teres HaAdam. That's what the Rashba is calling the Haramban Nestapik by. That the Ramban really didn't know what to do with this Shaila. He left space to come back to it and never came back to it. Mm-hmm. But then the Rashba says, but okay, so that's as far as the old sources. But then I had a Chacham Echad that passed through town and he told me two interesting Svaras. And he writes over the two Svaras that I just said, B'Shem the Rush. Now we know that the Rosh passed through the Rashba. The Rosh, who was a German rabbi, he's unique in, among the Rishonim, one of the only ones that the whole Tekubis of Rishonim, there was Sfarad and there was Ashkenaz, and one of the few that went back from one to, you know, that traveled from one to the other is the Rosh. He was German. He lived most of his life in Germany. He was the Gadol Hadar in Germany, and then when his position there became too precarious, as he was. Didn't feel safe there, so he ran away and he came to Spain. And he went to Barcelona. Barcelona, that's where the Rashba was. And he came to the Rashba, and he told him that I'm here in Spain. And at the same time that the Rosh came to the house of the Rashba, a letter came to the house of the Rashba from the community in Toledo saying that their rabbi just died and they're looking for a recommendation for a new rabbi. So the Rashba made the shidduch and he sent the Rosh to Toledo. In this tshuva, he refers to the Chacham Echad that came into his house and told him, and he says over exactly the two svaras that we read in the Rosh. So obviously he's describing his encounter with the Rosh. He didn't want to mention my name. I'm not sure why, but maybe because he ends up disagreeing. And so Mishum Kvoidai, maybe he didn't want to mention his name, but he ends up disagreeing. He says over the svar of the Rosh about how the Chayil might not want to eat. He doesn't comment. He just He just says it, but apparently he doesn't find it so convincing. He doesn't think that it's such a compelling svara. I guess the Rashba was not into Baal Batesh svaras. I'm sorry. But then he brings down the Merami Wurttemberg svara that it's better to shech the behema because Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is hutshra not tuchuya. And the Rashba says that if that was true, if I were to accept that Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is hutshra not tuchuya, then I would agree with the Merami Wurttemberg that we should shech the behema. But I think that, on the contrary, I think Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is duchuya, not hutshra. And says, there aren't really any Gemara. The Gemara never clears this hakira regarding Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. But the Gemara clears it regarding Karban Sivir Shabbat Betuma. Is that hutshra or duchuya? And over there we have a maskana that it's duchuya. So if anything, the evidence points in the direction of duchuya. Now, he does not mention, but I would throw in that the Rambam, in the beginning of Perek Beis of Hilchos Shabbos, he brings down the halacha of Pikuach Nefesh is Daicha Shabbos, and he uses the lashon of Dechuya. He says, Shabbos Dechuya he eats of Pikuach Nefesh. So the Rashba, because of this, you know, feeling that he had, this opinion that he has, that Shabbos is really Dechuya, not Hutra, he says it's better to feed the Nevela, because Nevela is a smaller Isser than the Shechita on Shabbos. So the Rashba is arguing on all the other Rishonim. If you think about it, we went through five Rishonim, four, the Ravid, the Merami Wurttemberg, and the Rosh, and the Ran, they all paskin that you should shech the behem on Shabbos. The Rashba argues, and he says that no, it's better to feed the Chayla Nevela on Shabbos. So in that sense, the Rashba is a Das Yochid against the other four. But what's so interesting over here is that we have four Rishonim that all paskin the same way, but mamish for four different reasons. Which means that each one didn't hold all of the reasons are very controversial, very debatable. So in a sense, each one is a Das Yachid. I mean, the Ravid is the only one of the five Rishonim that spoke about the Inyan that holds of his Svara. The Ran is the only one of the five that holds of his Svara. Each one is a Das Yachid. But La Halacha, four of them come out on the same side, and the Rashba's on the other side. So that's a little bit of an overview of this, you know, unusual discussion in Rishonim about this halacha.
Why not ask the doctor?
What?
Why not ask the doctor which is better?
I think if the doctor would recommend one out of the one option, then we would follow that. Yeah. But you know, probably Shkuta and Nevela would have the same effect.
He means what's the Rambam Shita?
Now, I think to back up on your discussion, we've gone to a second opinion from another doctor.
Okay, so we covered. So I would say that we covered the Inyan, you know, the Inyan and Halacha, we covered very nicely. We learned a lot of Torah today. The only thing that we didn't get is that usually it's connected to the Parsha, but we slugged up the connection to the Parsha. So listen to this. The Chassam Sofer and this Tshuva Ayin Tes that we were quoting from before, it's a tshuva to the Maritz Chiyas. At the end of the tshuva, he writes that, you know, I never mix drush. I don't like to mix drush with halacha, and I never put drush into my tshuvas, but mishum, I don't remember his lashon, but something to the effect of, since I love you so much, so I'm going to share this with you. And he said, and it's not mamish the same yisoid, but it's me'inyin le'inyin, related to the svara of the Ravid. And he says, in this week's parasha, we find that Avram Avinu, again, when we started off in Lech Lecha, but now we're in Vayera, we find that Avram Avinu was shechting animals and cooking meat for the Malachim, but they were Nidmu like Haravim, and he was doing Malacha for them. Chazal say that it was Pesach. This whole story, right, when Nispaser Sarah, that she was going to have a baby, happened on Pesach. On Yom Tif, yes, you're allowed to do malacha for Eichel Nefesh, but not for Goyim. Right. You're not allowed to cook for Goyim, you're not allowed to shecht for Goyim, and they would nidmu like Haravim. He thought they were Goyim, so how is he allowed to do that? He says, because I'll say that day was Shlish Lemila Sehaya. It was the third day for the Mila, which is the day that Yechel Sheish Beisakana, Huva An Shevesai. So his house was full of Yechel Sheish Beisakanas, so it was already Hutar for him to do malacha for all of those chaylim, so that made it leichter, at least, for him to do malacha for the, I'm skipping a step, really, he's working with a hoyel also, right. The hoyel that there are chaylim in the house, so that takes away from the severity of the malacha, says that's why Avraham was able to make this food for the malachim.
Wow. Well, and what was the